Hey, you guys, Courage the Alcoholic. What a great group, man. Just the spirit of this thing is. Marion, did you get that? Yes? Good, okay. I did a talk the other night where a friend of mine sent a nightly review, his kind of version of it. I really liked it. And it encompassed a little more than, you know, the reflections in the big book. I shared it before I asked him, you know. I was like, Mitchell, I hope that was okay. I shared that, you know, and I sent it out to a bunch of people. He didn't care. But normally, I'd be mindful of that. That was not the case when I came in here. I was not mindful of anything when I came in here. I lived in a little myopic world that pertained to Kurt Zimmerman, and you were cardboard cutouts in that world. That's what you were. You were cardboard cutouts. I didn't know that while I was in that world. I only knew that when I was out of that world. See? And part of the conversation, you know, so I think Marty said, what are you going to talk about tonight? I said, hell, I don't know. I've been talking all week. So what I want to talk about is this condition that underlies the irritable, restless discontentness of how we live and how we are in the world. And my solution to that was a Grey Goose vodka. You know, it wasn't that for a long time because I couldn't afford it after, you know, drinking for a while. It was the cheap stuff. But I lost the power to choose whether I drank or not in high school. I didn't know that until I read the big book and had a guy. You know, it was great, Reggie. He said, you know, get a big book and a sponsor. Because, you know, I mean, I could just take the big book and read it. And problem was I was asking all the wrong questions when I got here. And the guy that sat in front of me, he started asking me the right questions. And I couldn't come up with the right questions because of where I was in the paradigm that I lived in. And one of the questions he asked me, if it was new people, he said, did you ever try to quit drinking? I said, no. No. There was no reflection on that question. It was just a no. And the reason it was no was because the assumption was I hadn't quit. And when I really wanted to, I would. That's why I said I never tried. Which really was a statement of, I'm in control, but I didn't know that. That's all I was saying, was I'm in control. And he said, he didn't argue with me about that. He just said, well, we'll look at that, you know, as we go through the book. And that's what we did. We started looking at it. And I started to realize, man, I try to quit drinking a lot of times. Well, I told him I just changed my mind. And he said, oh, well, let's look at that, too. Let's just look at that. You just changed your mind. No, you just decided to drink again, huh? So we looked at that, and what I saw was in the big book, and it wasn't I needed to be convinced of this. What it was the truth of my condition revealed to me my condition. I realized I didn't change my mind, that my mind was changed, and it was without my permission a lot of times, because I had every reason not to drink. I sat in the penitentiary. I said, man, I counted those calendar days I was on the bottom bunk, and I had counted those calendar days on the upper bunk, right, you know, above my head, and said, man, I ain't doing this again. And got out of the penitentiary, and, you know, just like the book said, all went well for a time, and ended up in a bar, thinking I'd just have a couple, and, you know, started that madness all over again. And I didn't know what I was up against. I just didn't know. And I got a lot of misinformation in AA, to be honest with you. a lot of people, I got a lot of misinformation. I got a lot of misinformation from non-alcoholics. And the misinformation was, you know, you can quit if you really want to. And I'm an alcoholic of the type that doesn't work for me. I had to be released from the obsession to drink. I had to be released from. And that was a revelatory experience. That was not a, it wasn't a gradual experience like William James talked about. It was a revelatory experience. And I think we were talking to somebody about this the other day, and they said how we, the success in this program always comes through failure. The success in this program always comes through failure. In a book, in one of the books that I read, you know, it's one of many. It's Jose Gasset, I think his name, he was a Spanish poet from the 18th century. He said the only genuine ideas are the ideas of the shipwrecked. All the rest is rhetoric, posturing, and farce. And when I heard that, I thought, geez, that's me in the program. I came around here, I got here in 1979 via the court system in Texas, 22 years old. I'm 67 now. I failed utterly at this program. Drank it 19 years. I failed utterly at this program. But those failures were some of the biggest assets that I've ever been given. And one of those assets was this deep, deep appreciation for life and to be able to recognize the spirit you guys brought in here, the laughter, the happiness. I never experienced it. I met half you guys. I mean, and I feel like I know you. I feel like Marty's my brother. I've never met him. He's a brother from another mother. I mean, Jimmy came down to Louisiana when I spoke at a conference. I met Jimmy in person. I mean, Reggie, you know, just all these, there's a connection across this. And Don talks about this to me. He said, you know, there's a native teaching about the web, the spider web. And it was really funny when COVID happened. And this Zoom thing opened up. And there's a thing in the Eastern religions, you know, about this, that there's an interconnectedness. And it's like we accessed an interconnectedness through this Zoom platform that was not possible for me to access going to my local meeting, hearing the same message. It was like I was going to the same church, hearing the same thing being said every week. And what Zoom did is it opened that platform up. It was like I went to the Buddhist temple, then I went to the Hindu temple, then I went to the Jewish. It was like I got a spectrum of all the different world traditions, the philosophies. And then guess what? Because my meme is AA, I'd go, man, they say that in AA. Geez, they say the same thing in AA. You know? And well, it's no accident because we borrowed everything from religion, science, philosophy. I mean, look at the 300 manuscripts that were sent out in the beginning. They were sent out to who? They were sent out to clergy. They were sent out to doctors. They were sent out to psychiatrists. They were sent out to psychologists. There's a red book that has little pencil drawings in it about what they thought was a good thing to say and what they thought wasn't. It's fascinating when you read it. If you're interested in that kind of stuff. I'm kind of a geek that way. I kind of like that stuff. It speaks to me in a way that analytical information and just general talk doesn't. It enlivens my spirit. It's all I was ever looking for. All I was ever looking for was to be free from this condition, this bondage of self. That's all I was ever looking for. But for 19 years, I tried to be free from the bondage of self. Thank you, Jimmy. As the bondage of self. And it didn't work. I tried to be free from the bondage of self as the bondage, meaning I was identified as this self. This self is not a physical thing. It is a mental construct. It's a mental energy. It's not me. And the reason I know it's not me, because I know it ain't you either. Because I know what you are. I can feel it. I can see it in your eyes. I see it when you treat newcomers. When I came to AA, I had no idea what I was up against. And I'm sure there were plenty of guys that did. And you know, when I was jabbering and telling them what all my problems were and they were listening to me, I'm sure they were going, oh my God. Like, these are symptoms. These are not problems. These are symptoms of a problem. And it says it in our book. It says the main purpose of this book is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem, singular. That's what it says. A belief system did not get me to that. I tried to believe in something I didn't believe in. It didn't work. Now, it was a rung on the ladder. I had to start somewhere. I tried to believe in stuff that, you know, you told me that I was trying to believe in. The only reason I'm trying to believe in something is because I do not believe in it. That's why I'm trying to believe it. I didn't know that. So, looking back on it, I'm kind of just reflecting on the day. I've been in this thing where Joe said to me a long time ago, he said, do you ever get that sense you got so much gratitude? He said, you go home, and he said, you feel like you're going to choke on it because you're not giving it away enough. That's kind of how I feel. And I don't know how much more I can talk or give this stuff away or, you know, we can carry this message in a lot of ways. We can talk about it. But it's got to manifest. You got to help the new guy. You got to help however it manifests. Everybody is different. Everybody's got a calling to that. And I think there's a great promise in the book. It says God provides what you need if you keep close to him. So if you ask that, you know, for that, you just got to pay attention because you're going to get an answer to that. Because it'll show up as your life if you're paying attention. So what keeps popping into my head is this, is inventory. We got a little process. I'm real big on the menus, not the meal. I worshiped the menu for a long time. Now, I'm not negating the importance of the menu. The menu is like a finger pointing. It's not the meal. I know that from a living experience. Of 19 years of managing my life with my ego's interpretation of a spiritual principle. I know what that looks like. That looks like whack-a-mole. You hit it here, it pops up over here. You hit it here. It's a management tool that I was using that I didn't know I was using because it's all I had access to. And, you know, when I called Coyus and I got released and I had, you know, this little revelatory experience that, basically destroyed me. I said, hey, I think I know what I was doing. And he said, what? And I said, I think, you know, in the book it says we step from bridge to shore. It's really like I didn't step from bridge to shore. It's more like I got carried over to the new shore. And I said, I think I was managing my life with spiritual principles. And he goes, that's not what you were doing. I said, what do you mean? He said, you were managing your life with your ego's interpretation of spiritual principles. He said, those are very different. Spiritual principles have to be embodied. They have to be lived. This is a way of living. It's a creative act. And we're the channels for that. And it doesn't take intellect to recognize those channels. So there's a word he uses, he calls it Natashnia. There's a thing that comes across the screen, you recognize it. You know when someone's telling you the truth because it's true. Doesn't need you to identify it as truth. It's true because it's true. And there's a part of you that starts to wake up. In AA, we call it intuition, sixth sense, that we have access to and believe in. That's the way the book's written. We'll believe it once we access it. And we'll believe it in a completely different way. And that intuitive sense adds another color to the spectrum of the five senses, let's just say. It's not just the mind. It adds another picture, a little broader. I like to say it's kind of like I watched TV and it was black and white for a long time. And then all of a sudden it was high def color. And I was like, whoa, what was that? See? Now, if that's new, there's a real learning curve living from that. There's a real learning curve. And the beauty of this program is we have a daily reprieve to grow in effectiveness and understanding of that. And we can walk in both those worlds, the physical and the spiritual. They're not really two worlds, they're one. But we use duality in language, so that's what I'm using. They're one world. The physical world is a manifestation of the spiritual world. So I think AA, and I don't know any, and I believe me, I've studied a lot of this. I don't know any other process except for the 12 steps that can bring you into relationship with what you are. I don't. I mean, I see a lot. I mean, there's a lot of modalities of therapy and stuff like that. And I'm not knocking it at all. My partner's a therapist for 32 years. Member Al-Anon. She does a great job. One of the things they told me was, she said, it's really funny. She said, we go to lunch on Sundays and there's three therapists and me. She says, you're like a missing link in what we do. And I said, what do you mean by that? And they, you know, because you always got to ask a bunch of Al-Anons what they mean by that. And it could be dangerous, you know. And she said, it's kind of funny. It was really funny the way they answered. She said, we help expose the condition and manage it. She said, what you do is you try to expose it. Now, and not manage it, but see it. Because the seeing of it is the freeing of it. And I'm not talking about seeing it here. I'm talking about seeing it the same way we see in AA. When I really saw I was alcoholic, I did not have to do anything to be released from it. It was like that grace, that miracle of all of a sudden I looked around and I said, oh man, I don't have the obsession. Like there wasn't anything I did. There was no doing in it. There was a depth of understanding, I think, that was given. There was no effort involved. Now, how do you keep that going? I think that's where the steps and meetings and working with people, I think that's how you keep it going on a daily reprieve. I do it on a daily basis. I go to the beach, 74 degrees, sun's out. It's like summertime out here. I got everything I need. I really, really have everything I need. I don't need anything. And I have a good life. I have healed relationships. I trashed a marriage that I was in. My former wife, I won't say ex-wife because she's not an ex-wife, she's a former wife, is 38 years sober. I got sober with her years ago. Wonderful woman. We got a great relationship. I get along better with her now than we were married. That's because of the steps. That's because of amends. It's because of inventory. It's because of sin. Not my role, but self's role in my life driving me to do things that I wouldn't have done. And, I mean, it says it in our book. So my relationship with my kids is healed. The relationships with, I had a lot of AA members. I did some damage here in the program. And, but all through living, you know, living, I say living amends, meaning doing this on a regular basis and doing what we do. Hey, get on the phone and say, hey, listen, you got some time. I want to have coffee with you. Need to talk to you. Talking to them about about my role in it. Let's just say my role. And not even touching their role if they had a part in it, right? Because when you do that, what happens is this. This is my experience. You activate a defense system, a wall that goes up. They don't hear a thing you say. Soon as you talk about anything that has to do with them. And it's funny that when we're open and honest and reveal ourselves to someone, there's almost a compassion that they are able to access that they couldn't access. And it's just funny how this thing works, you know, how these principles work. And so inventory, back to inventory. So let me give you a 10-step perspective of a 4-step. It's real simple. First two columns are never true. Ever. That is a 10-step perspective of a 4-step inventory. First two columns are never true. So it says, we continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admit it, right? Isn't that the 10th step? Somebody nodded their head. Now, if I just read that, I would think it meant I need to go back and write inventory. That's what I would think. But if I read the paragraphs in the 10th step, I would get a different picture. I would get a living, moving principle that I could incorporate in my life based on what I did in the 4-step. It's not the same thing. This is why I say the 10th step is never, first two columns are never true. Because what happens is, if Marty pisses me off, the first thing I go to is I go to third column. I don't go to first two columns. I see what was hurt, threatened, or interfered with. It's not about Marty. This is about what Marty did. That is a fourth step perspective. In the 10th step, it's not about what Marty did. It's about how what Marty did affected me, period. So this is what I'm talking about. So I want to make this distinction, because I've talked about this before with guys I sponsor. Because they always go back and write inventory. I'm like, oh, this isn't what we're talking about here. But now, if you got to do that, that's great. To get what I'm talking about, that's great. That's great. But when you can go, if Linda pisses me off, it's not what Linda did. It's my reaction. I need to look at that. Now, I'm not saying she didn't do something. There might be some change there, but the first thing I'm going to look at is how it hurt, threatens, or interferes with some aspect of the condition of self that's driving me, not me. The third column is not me. It's how I've become based on conditioning, belief systems, old ideas, what I've learned, the shame, the guilt, the remorse I've told myself, others have told me. It's an accumulation of all that. And that was me for a long time. And I'm here to say that is not me. That is the bondage of self that you can be free from. Because we are so much bigger than that. So much more than that. So much more than that. And we see it in people all the time. We recognize it. We just don't. I think know how to articulate it or appreciate it. I don't know. It just seems like there's not one of us that isn't very caring. I mean, when I was drinking and I was wrecking my life, I was wrecking my family's life at 19 years, and I had people in AA say, oh, he don't want to get sober. I had literal alcoholics saying he didn't want to get sober. Now, I'm drinking. I'm going to my boat. I'm taking my boat out. I'm anchoring it in the harbor. And I'm drinking myself to sleep because I can't look at my children. I can't face them anymore. And you're telling me I don't want to quit drinking? See, I was driven. You cannot tell me that. I know that's not a fact. That is a misunderstanding of the condition they're up against, let alone me. I needed to be released from that condition. And by a certain circumstances, I was, you know, I was, you know, most of you guys know this. I was sent to a meeting I didn't want to go to. I went because I was willing. It was a men's stag. I hate men's stags. And they were talking about managing your life, you know, with spiritual principles. And I'm like, I'm drinking, you know, and somebody called on me and I complained about my wife, how she ruined everything. She left. She divorced me. And now she was, you know, I mean, she screwed everything up, don't you know? I mean, I couldn't see, you know, I was the one, you know, pulling the house down. You don't see that when you're drinking. And a little old man followed me out to my plumbing truck, and he said, listen, he said, I noticed you raised your hand as a newcomer. I said, yeah, I did. And I said, that's because I was drinking today. I wanted to say, you idiot, but I didn't. And he said, well, I know that. He said, I know you drink because you're alcoholic. That's all he said. It was like the definition was all encompassed in that statement. The first 43 pages in that statement. He said, every time you raise your hand as a newcomer, you put more guilt and remorse on the condition you're trying to extinguish. Stop raising your hand. You're not a newcomer. And it was like that. It was like this. There was a resonance of truth that came across that he carried. And I recognized it. And I hadn't recognized that for a long time. Then he walked off and just left me standing there in the parking lot. And so about a couple weeks later, I did the same thing, complained about my wife. And then he followed me back out the plumbing truck again. I thought, here he comes, little old man, 100-pound, 80-year-old guy riding a Goldwing. Ted J. Profound. One of those old guys with a twinkle in his eye, you know, didn't say much. And he said, can I make another suggestion? When he said that the first time, all I wanted him to do was get done talking so I could go home and drink. And when he said it the second time, I was listening because he dropped some truth on me the first time. He said, if I write a prayer for you to say, will you say it? He said, I guarantee it'll work. Now, he didn't explain what that meant. So he wrote a prayer, and the prayer is back here on this little altar, whatever you want to call it. He said, and the prayer was this, God, please give Rhonda the very best that life has to offer. Please give her health, happiness, and prosperity. And please give her a peace and understanding she's never experienced before. He said, I guarantee if you say that prayer, it'll work. He said, will you say it? I said, yeah, I will. So I said that prayer drinking. I said that prayer gritting my teeth. I said that prayer in an empty room where she moved everything out. I said that prayer pissed off. I said that prayer happy. I said that prayer, but I said it. And right before Christmas, that prayer happened to me. And I got released. And that's the bottom line of what happened. That was about 14 years ago. And that was a profound revelatory experience. That gave me access to, I love this part in the book, and I'll claim it. This is in 12 and 12. It's in the 11th step. I get goosebumps just even turning to the page. Now and then, we may be granted a glimpse of that ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom. We be comforted and assured that our own destiny in that realm will be secure for so long as we try, however faultingly, to find and do the will of our own Creator. That's very descriptive of that experience. And when the me dropped away, the person I thought I was, this condition of self, then I was really able to see the condition because I was looking at it from a different place. And that's the thing where when I said to Coyus, I stepped from bridge to shore, I think I was carried. And I said, you know, I don't care what I got to do to maintain this. I don't care if it's a money job. I'm maintaining this because I lost it one time. And the richness and the sacredness of this thing and how it's transformed life and the relationships, I'm not willing to give that up. So you guys allowed me to come here and participate in this once again. And I know some of you guys, I'd get tired of listening to me if I was me. But I really appreciate you guys coming in. Reggie, thanks for asking me.
Thank you so much, Kurt.